It doesn't happen often, but there are certain times when you know you're going to do a series that you know you have at least one illustration that you have to use at some point. And so when we titled this Zoom Out, I knew exactly what I wanted to do at some point, which was to show you this book. This book is called Zoom. It has no words in it. And so I want to show you quickly just what it's like, that idea of seeing one thing and not seeing the bigger picture. And so we're going to go through a couple of the pictures from this book. This is how the book Zoom starts. Quite obvious, right? And so what happens is this book, page after page, starts zooming out. And so what this goes from is a rooster. The rooster is in a is being seen by children in a barn looking out a window. The children in the window are in this barn. And so you continue to zoom out. The further you zoom out, you start to realize that this barn is actually a playset that a little girl is playing. This little girl playing is actually on a magazine being read by a person on a cruise ship. It continues to zoom out more as you see the cruise ship get bigger and bigger. You realize it's actually an ad on the side of a bus. As it continues to zoom out further and further, it becomes a commercial on a TV that a man is reading, watching in Arizona. But if you've already figured out, even this, you zoom out and you realize, as you can see from the bottom of it, is actually a stamp that's on a letter. And this letter is being handed to a tribe on an island that an airplane is flying over. And as it continues to zoom back, it gets to the earth. And actually, my favorite page is actually the last page, but it turns out it's really hard to get a picture of a black page with a single white dot. But that's the last page. It's just a single white dot. And I love that. Because of that idea of just so often, we can get so caught up in a picture like this and go, I don't know what's going on anymore. And it takes us backing up to realize that there's a bigger thing going on sometimes, to realize how one little thing fits in a bigger picture. And so that's what we're doing. We're going through the story of the Bible as a big picture. And so we've done creation. And we've done the fall, which are two very big things that you have to cover in order to get through the rest of this. Now comes the fun one. Because we spent two chapters on creation, we spent one chapter on the fall, and now I have about a little over 900 chapters to go over today. So are you ready? Thankfully, I had a little practice at camp, so we're basically about to go through the entire rest of the story of the Old Testament. And I'm going to get a help in just a minute. And so if my teens want to move to this front row, they can be moving now, and I'll start grabbing them as we go. But to help you set this up, I kind of titled this a Chosen People. God has to choose a people. But before this, let me explain why. Because right after the fall, Adam and Eve get kicked out of the garden, and the very next story we get is their sons, and so we're up to four people now, and one of them becomes a murderer. Like, that's how far we get before I was listening to a TikTok make fun of the idea of, like, one-fourth of the population took out one-fourth of the population. Like, I was like, that's actually really crazy to think about, the fact that, like, that's where we were at. It only took four people before someone dies. And it gets further. You get onto Noah, and you get this. Now the world has gotten so violent and so destructive that God regrets making humans. It hurts him. It pains him to see what they've become. But he sees the good, and he saves a family of Noah and his family through the ark. And even that story is great up until the chapter afterwards, where even Noah is the first to build a vineyard and can't hold his wine, and something happens there, and we go further, and we get the generations start coming, and even out of these generations decide to make a name for themselves instead of being with God, and they try to make a tower as big as they can and reach the heights of heavens, which is funny because it says God came down to them. They didn't get far enough and has to separate them. Already, in just the first few chapters, we already see the cycle happening. Nehemiah explains it this way. It says, "But despite all this, they were disobedient and rebelled against you. They turned their backs on your law. They killed your prophets who wanted them to return to you. And they committed terrible blasphemies. So you handed them over to their enemies who made them suffer. But in their time of trouble, they cried out to you, and you heard them from heaven. In your great mercy, you sent them liberators who rescued them from their enemies. But as soon as they were at peace, your people again committed evil in your sight. And once more, you let their enemies conquer them. Yet whenever your people turned and cried to you again for help, you listened once more from heaven. In your wonderful mercy, you rescued them many times." I found a picture representing it. The cycle of sin. They start with the blessing of God that leads to disobedience, that leads to discipline, that leads to outcry, that leads to listening, that leads to deliverance, back to blessing. And this cycle is something that happens again and again. I mean, Nehemiah is talking about it not from the beginning of the story. No, he's talking at the end of the Old Testament, that they never get it right. You have this cycle that ends up looking like this. Over and over, they follow this cycle. Whether it's one person in Genesis or a family or a nation, they can't seem to get it right. And that's what we're looking at today, this cycle of going, trying to get it right. And then hopefully, as you see, the other cycle that starts happening is this idea that Israel begins, as they see themselves caught up in the cycle, hoping for someone to help them break that cycle. And that's what we're going to look at for the rest of this time. And so we're going to see if I can do as well as I did at camp when I did it with the teenagers, if I can get through most of the Old Testament in about 20, 25 minutes. So here we go. All right, so right after Tower of Babel, God says, okay, it's time to pick a people. So we pick a people. And so he picks Abraham. And so I'm going to get Ethan to come up here. This way to help the rest of us who maybe don't know the story well, we're going to get little place markers. We got to make room. There's a lot of going on in 900 chapters, okay? So we got Abraham. Abraham is picked to be the one, the start of it all, the father of the faithful. And so I just need you to do your hands like this and look up, like you're thanking God, you're following him. And so we have Abraham. He said he would do this for the entire 20 minutes, so I said, all right. So we start here. And God picks one person that through his family, a blessing will come. This is what Genesis says. It says, "The Lord had said to Abram, 'Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you.'" So already we've got a promise here that God says not only is a great nation going to come from one man, but from this one person, this one family chosen, all families, all nations will be blessed through one. But if you read the story of Abraham and really the family, you really quickly realize they're pretty messed up. They have some problems. They can't seem to tell the truth always. There's a lot of trickery going on. There's a lot of sibling rivalry later, and they can't get it right. And so we find our next part of the story. This one family becomes a nation, and now they've ended up in slavery. And so if I can get, I believe I had Milo, or no, Zeke, can you come up and grab that stick for me while you're coming up. So God sees the nation, and now they're in, now they're in slavery. And so God, once again, I'd flip it around, put the heavier in, there you go. God grabs a man and says, named Moses. And he picks Moses and he says, all right, you're going to be the people that lead my people out of Egypt. And this man comes into their lives and he faces hardship after hardship. And you can understand, I mean, this is the moment. This is the stories that if you know any stories of the Old Testament, people know. The 10 plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, the 10 commandments. We've made movies about it. And so you have this moment where the first leader comes into place. This is the guy who knew God as a friend. Every time that cycle continues with the people, they whine, they complain. Every time Moses stands strong up until he doesn't. Even Moses falls short. And so for Moses, we have the staff, but I want you to, every so often, if I say Moses, for now on, I want you to just raise the staff up. Because that's what he did. He parted the Red Sea. It was him that led the people across to dry land on the way to the promised land. But even Moses would not be able to enter the promised land. And so we get Deuteronomy, where it's written, Moses continued, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your fellow Israelites. You must listen to him. And so you have this moment where we've gone from one man, a faithful man trying to lead a family, to now a nation being led by a man. But he wasn't the guy. He wasn't able to do it. They didn't actually finish the promise. They didn't make it to the promised land. So Moses says, hey, another is coming, a fellow Israelite, someone, and you must listen to him. And so your first thought is, oh, it must be the next guy, Joshua. Samuel, if you'll come up and grab that sword. And so you get Samuel who comes, or I said Samuel. You get Joshua who comes along right after Moses. And he's the guy that actually, he does some pretty cool things. He does the exact same thing that Moses did. Instead of splitting the Red Sea, he splits the Jordan and they go across on dry land into the promised land. And you're like, yes, they made it. They made it into the promised land. Except the problem is the promised land isn't empty. There's people there. And so you get stories like the Battle of Jericho and all these other wonderful names that are hard to pronounce, like Amalekites. And they're forced to conquer the land. But you can see how they can go, oh, but that's what we needed, right? We needed a conqueror. That's what we needed next. We had the leader, but now we need someone who can be the conqueror. Lead us into the land of victory, the promised land, to bring us peace. Except Hebrews tells us that wasn't true either. Hebrews 4 says, now if Joshua had succeeded in giving them this rest, God would not have spoken about another day of rest still to come. So there is a special rest still waiting for the people of God. So you see, now we've gone to Abraham. We've gone to Moses. There you go. Joshua. All right. And so Well, Moses wasn't the guy. There's one coming to listen to him, but now we realize Joshua wasn't the guy. So then the question becomes, who? And that's where we see the cycle really pick up with the judges. And so Zoe, I'm going to have you come up, and if you grab the little gavel I have there, I always find it funny. This is what we think of when we see the word judge. I'm going to have to put you here because I realize I got more people because I promised I would use everyone since half the group is missing today. So we've got our judges, right? And truth be told, the very first few you read, Deborah included, are some of the best ones. I always tell people, when you read Joshua, just understand it's only going to get worse. Like, we start off with some judges, and truth be told, like, Deborah, who's like one of the best ones, and the other two guys that are in that category of the better ones, they get like stories that are this big. Deborah's the first one to get this full story, and then we lead to Gideon, who's a coward. Then we lead to Samson, who doesn't seem to be any better than the people around him. God just kind of uses him for his own means. And then you get to the end of Judges, which I'll let you read on your own. We'll cover that another day, like so much that we're about to cover. But you do, you have the judges, and time after time, they fall short. Whether the judges themselves or the nation as a whole, every time they find themselves being conquered because they've forgotten about God. Going into captivity or being held over by some nation, having to pay taxes and tribute, losing all their crops to these people, and God hears their cry, he comes to the rescue, he sends a judge to free them, to liberate them. Hooray, they do great up until the judge dies and they forget and the cycle repeats. And we get to the end of Judges where it says this fun line that explains really the whole book, which is, in those times, Israel had no king, and so each person did what was fit in their own eyes. Which gets us to 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. We get this lovely idea of the kings. That's what we need. I love this. This is one of my favorite parts. We hit this point, and Israel goes, that's what we need, a king. Everyone else has a king. We need a king. That's what we want. Which I always point out to people, anytime you look at everyone else and say, this is working for everyone else, that's what we need, and it completely walks away from what God is doing, it's not going to go well usually. And so God does let them have a king. The first king he lets them have is this guy named Saul, who's a foot taller than everyone else, and I find that hilarious that we don't talk about that part of the story, because he's this tall guy in the room, and he does great for about a year. And then we have this wonderful moment where he doesn't listen. He does things his own way. And eventually we get led to this story about that everyone knows, David and Goliath. Wesley, would you come up here and would you grab that crown for me? And so you have this moment where David goes up against the Goliath because no one else will. You have a giant of the Philistines wanting to fight the rest. Stand right there. Come back to you. Don't put the crown on yet. You're not king yet. And so you have this moment where Goliath comes out and says, who's going to fight me? No one's willing to fight. Who's the tallest one in the Israel camp? King Saul, who's a foot above the rest, it says. And he's going, so do I have any takers? David happens to randomly show up bringing food to his brothers. He says, hey, I'll do it because I trust in God, not in my own understanding of things. God will get me through it. So he goes and does through it. And you have this moment where it is. There's this jealousy. Saul chases him for years. Saul eventually dies. David the whole time not willing to take Saul's life, even though it's given to him multiple times. And eventually, now you can put it on, David becomes king. And this is really a great moment because we hit the pinnacle moment. It's not the king we wanted, it's the king God gave us. It seems to be like we're hitting that moment, that stride. Everything's going right. We started all the way back here with this line of Abraham, where I came back to you. Seeing if that nation would bless other nations. Moses leads them, and he wasn't the guy. Joshua conquers the land, but he wasn't the guy. The judges come and they continue to fall into this cycle, but finally they get a king. And it seems like this is what was supposed to happen. And you have this moment where it comes all together. 2 Samuel, this is what God promises to him. He says, for when you die and are buried with your ancestors, I will raise up one of your descendants, your own offspring, and I will make his kingdom strong. He is the one who will build a house, a temple for my name, and I will secure his royal throne forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. If he sins, I will correct and discipline him with the rod. like any father would do. But my favor will never be taken from him as I took it from Saul, whom I removed from your sight. Your house and your kingdom will continue before me for all time, and your throne will be secure forever." And the truth is, really, at this point, Wesley doesn't represent just David. He represents the kings, because we hit this moment of Solomon, the next guy. He builds the temple. And you can understand how in this moment they thought they were there. They build the house of God. God dwells with them. He is a part of their city. They have everything, wealth, power, authority. Everyone knows who they are. And like so many times before the story, the next chapter rolls around. David falls to sin, gets a woman pregnant, kills off her husband to try and play it off. That doesn't go well. You think, okay, but he repents, and right after that, then you have his kids raping and killing each other, and David the whole time knows and says nothing. It gets gruesome. Why? Because all of a sudden, we start to realize the king isn't the guy either. We thought he was. And we were promised a kingdom forever. But like each one before him, God rose these people up to show them what they needed, but never was it enough. And so we continue moving forward, and now we move all the way to the prophets. And so if I can have Mahalo and Boone to come up here. Sorry, no props for y'all. You get hand motions. We had prophets with their fiery messages. And guys, you're like bringing down fire. Come on, like, you're calling it down. Thank you, Boone. All right, so we go all the way through this now, right? And we get to the kings, and during the time of the kings, we start getting these prophets that are coming along. They're trying to help. They're saying, hey, you're doing it wrong. You've got to turn back from God. And I'm going to let Boone take it, because he's got the fire. He's what we need. We get one particular guy. We get Elijah, right? He is like the prophet. He has no problem throwing it down with people. And so he says, listen up, here we go. God is going to make it not rain. Famine, 3 years. God hadn't even told him that. Like, he just walks in and says it. And God's like, oh, okay, guess that's what we're doing. Let's prove a point. You get these moments where Elijah's the one who goes before the prophets of Baal, 400 against one. And he sits there and he sits back and he makes fun of them. While they have this competition of who's going to bring down the fire. And Elijah pours water on the offering, not because I think just to show that it wasn't an accident, but also because water during a time of drought is the most precious thing. He pours the most precious thing, and fire comes and takes everything. If it gets tiring, y'all can put your arms down. It's fine. But that's where we had the prophets. But each time the prophets came and spoke the words, some listened, some didn't. I promise, you really can't put your arms down. Malachi, one of those prophets, said this: "Look, I am sending you the prophet Elijah before the great and dreadful day of the Lord arrives. His preaching will turn the hearts of fathers and their children, and their hearts of the children to their fathers. Otherwise, I will come and strike the land with a curse." And interesting thing is, Malachi isn't during this time. He's over here. We're not talking about this Elijah. Once again, we're saying this Elijah wasn't enough. He couldn't change the hearts the way we wanted them to change. Elijah actually ends feeling depressed because it feels like nothing changed. And yet, Malachi says, no, Elijah is coming again. And we know that story. It's starting to maybe sound familiar. That there is an Elijah coming. And so, from Abraham to Moses to Joshua to Judges to the kings to the prophets, All right, Wes, I didn't give you a hand motion. I feel like I need to give you something with your, you're just wearing it, but you're doing it great. All through this line, there you go. All through this line, you have this cycle. It's continuing to happen of following God, forgetting God, being restored, forgetting. Over and over, and each time, men and women being brought into the fold, thinking that maybe this will be the person to finally get us out of it. But it's not enough. Eventually, they fall to exile. The whole nation can't figure it out. And so each nation, after a civil war, now north and south, each is led away in exile. North is the northern tribe, Israel, never to be seen again. The tribe of Judah, who is still that line of David, of the king we're waiting for and have not seen yet. We wait. And so in that exile, Ava, Millie, will you grab the chains? Their children are led into exile. Put your hands out. And are led away. And you can understand during this time, this is one of their biggest lows, because it's like, not only have we like, someone conquered us and we're having to pay tribute, now we're in a land that's no longer our own. Has God forgotten us? I promise you really can't put your arms down. Because you do. You have this moment where you're sitting here thinking, God, maybe he's forgotten us. Maybe he doesn't know anymore. Maybe that promise long ago no longer applies to us. Maybe we've fallen too short. Maybe we have forgotten too much. Maybe this is what we deserve. Do you feel that, right? Those moments where you think, maybe it's just not enough. It was never supposed to be me. I'm not good enough. That's where we're at. And yet in that exile, we have characters like Daniel who receive visions. As he says, as my vision continued that night, I saw someone like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient One and was led into his presence. He was given authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations of the world so that people of every race and nation and language would obey him. His rule is eternal. It will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed. Now you're seeing how one little story here, did you hear it? How all of a sudden we hear this promise of the nations. Wait, that's Abraham. The kingdom that will last forever. Wait, that's David. No. You see this all starting to flow together. There is something more we're talking about that we've been looking for this whole time. The hope that comes in that moment. And that for a moment they realize, I think I know what it is. Evie, would you grab those two bricks and be my last one? I'm glad we timed that right because we were running out of room. Finally, they get to go home, at least some of them. A time of rebuilding, a time of getting to see what it used to be, because for some of them, they've been gone so long, they don't remember what it used to look like. The first temple was completely destroyed and gone. The walls were turned down. And so we have this moment where Haggai says this. He says, the future glory of this temple will be greater than its past glory, says the Lord of Heaven's Army. And in this place, I bring peace. I, the Lord of Heaven's Army, have spoken. And it's interesting because when they were rebuilding the temple, they lay the foundation out. And for the younger people in the group, they're cheering, they're yelling because they're so overwhelmed that God has returned to them, at least in their mind. And yet some of the older Israelites weep because they see the foundation and they remember what it used to be and they realize this isn't the same. It's a little smaller. It's not as grand. The supplies we're using aren't the same ones that we had in the past. And so you have this moment of, even though it felt like this was the time, this was the moment, it's not the moment. And this is the story of the Old Testament. That starting with one man, Abraham, to Moses, to Joshua, to Judges, through the kings, the prophets, even in exile and a return. They feel the weight of that cycle. They feel the weight of, when is it enough? When will it be our time? When will God bring us the one who has been promised? Thank you. Y'all can sit down and y'all can put your stuff on the front pew. Give them a round of applause. Nothing like asking a bunch of middle schoolers, hey, do you think you can stand on stage for 15 minutes? But as we wrap up, I want to end with this. If you haven't caught on yet, the prophet said long ago, Hebrews is pointing out this, long ago God spoke many times and in many ways to our ancestors through the prophets. And now in these final days, he has spoken to us through his son. God promised everything to the son as an inheritance. And through the son, he created the universe. That's what the whole Old Testament becomes about. That actually, even before Abraham, if you remember last week, that moment of hope, even in the curse where he says, one of your offspring will come and crush the head of the snake. That story is playing out. And so we see this cycle playing again and again and again, building both a nation, but also building that tension of, when will it be enough? When will someone come? And maybe you feel that in your own life. Maybe you feel that tension. When will it be enough? Why can't I be enough? What do I have to do? Who do I need? I think that's why we love a hero. We can't get enough of them. The protagonist, the one who comes and saves the day, man, woman, creature, it doesn't matter. We want to see that moment where the good guy comes in, saves everyone, whether it be sci-fi, fantasy, or romance, to sweep them off their feet. It doesn't matter. We want that moment because it's the moment we long for in our own hearts. Ecclesiastes says, eternity has been written on our hearts. I think that's what the Old Testament is showing us. It's this idea of, yes, there's this nation, and yes, let me show you how God works and these laws that he gives to give you a glimpse into who God is. But at the end of the day, it was all leading to one person. A person that you could slowly start to see, and truly, I didn't even spend enough time with the prophets who not only tried to get them back, but gave hints and pictures of something greater to come. Prophesying that there is one to come, and we're going to cover that in 2 weeks. And so I leave you with this. Do you feel that need? Praise team, you can come on up. Do you feel that caught up in that cycle? Do you feel that yearning for something more, for someone more to cover it? I'm not even going to give the answer, because if you can't figure out the answer, I can't hope you come back in 2 weeks just to find it out, or grab me afterwards. Of the one who is coming, the King of all kings, the fulfillment of the promise, the one greater than Moses, the one greater than Elijah, the one the prophets spoke of, the one that we all need. That's what the Old Testament is pointing us to.